Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. Johns Hopkins University has come up with a study published in the New England Journal of Medicine talking about intermittent fasting and what are called live fasts to live longer, meaning I'll explain it in detail. We've just finished having a group of people in a clinical study do exactly that every Saturday and Sunday, plus 15 hours of fasting every day for the past 60 days. And now this week they finish the 90th day, so that study is over. We're just waiting for the final blood lab results, and I'll share them with you when we get them. Then we're going to take a look at several issues. I'm going to have a commentary today, my own, and I'm going to invite the audience to share throughout today's program. So each time I do a commentary or a special audio-video presentation, please feel free to call in with your opinion, your ideas. I value the opinions of this audience. Our callback number is 888-874-4888. Again, write it down, 888-874-4888, because I think you're going to find enough things to respond to. For example, one of the issues we're going to discuss and show you a video of is self-esteem, gratification, and addiction by Simon Sinek. Then we're going to have why young people are more depressed than ever before, and then the truth why everyone is suddenly getting offended. Plus, I'm going to have a commentary from Chris Hedges, and it's going to be all about the impeachment's moral hypocrisy from Truthdig and Chris Hedges. Then I'm going to share information on a group of celebrities who just spent time having a great time in Saudi Arabia. Great place to go, lots of openness and freedom. You can express yourself there, especially if you're gay or if you're a woman or if you're a Shia. Yeah. Now, you would have thought that of all the places in the world to go and hang out and party, that Saudi Arabia would not be the first choice, right? So we're going to have a message today for all the celebrities that are always virtue-shaming everyone else. Maybe they should look carefully in the mirror, because there is a moral hypocrisy afoot here. And do they even know how to read, except their agents' contracts, for do I get a private plane? Do I get champagne? How much money do we get? Do we get to go shopping for free in one of those Saudi stores where the billionaires shop? But did they ever hear of Ezra Al-Ghamgham, G-H-A-M-G-A-M? They should have heard of him, because he was just beheaded. What did he do? He was a human rights activist in Saudi Arabia, possibly one of the most dangerous assignments in the world. He had courage, and they just cut off his head. But hey, when you're from Hollywood, who cares, right? God, these people, they are just the lowest of the low, in my opinion. Not all of them, but many of them, especially these clowns. I'll give you their names, and they should be called out for going to a place that sponsors terrorism, that is misogynist in the extreme, that provides no rights, no human rights, no personal rights, monitors their people, has cut off more heads of more of their citizens than any other country in the world this year, sponsors terrorism, supports all terrorist organizations around the world, was one of the financial parties behind 9/11, killed its own citizen and critic, Khashoggi, and yet not a word of shouldn't we not do business with him by our State Department or White House. Wow. So you have a chance to talk back at that, but I'll give you more details coming up. So you see, we have a lot to share today, but we always start with something that can empower everyone. And empowering people about health is a good place to start. For many people, the new year is a time to adopt healthier habits, to, in effect, renew or start new commitments, to just raise yourself up from wherever you've been to a different level. If you've never gone to the opera or ballet or symphony or a folk festival, do so. If you haven't read good quality nonfiction, if you have not read the classics, if you've not read the great historians from the past, if you're not familiar with Maimonides' work, Socrates, become familiar with them. Take your time and read this. If you've not learned a new word, try to learn one word per day and then how to use it. All this is good for our health. It's especially good for our mental health. But in the process of developing this new introspection and new discipline that supports it, we also want to make sure that we're keeping our body physically tuned, that we're avoiding those foods and beverages that will in any way challenge our body, and that also we do some intermittent fasting. What do I mean? I mean that there's a substantial health impact of intermittent fasting on the human body. In effect, it's allowing the body to rejuvenate, cleanse out, and you do it with juices, living juices, like wheatgrass juice, fresh made. And one good way to do it is you make all of your juices on your most relaxing day, maybe a Saturday, maybe a Sunday. You freeze them, but then you freeze them in containers, and don't get your plastic containers, but get a container like a stainless steel container, or where there's no chemicals that leach into the material that you're freezing. And then each night, you put how much you want to drink the next day from the freezer to the refrigerator. By the way, you can do the same thing for making grains like quinoa or millet, brown rice. And then you freeze it, and then what you want to eat the next day, you just put it in the refrigerator that night. Now, you can also make all your salads for the week, and there are certain types of green bags that allow food to stay fresher about twice as long. And what you do after you wash your fruits and vegetables thoroughly, I call it the triple wash, where you wash it, then agitate it in water, throw out the water, then rinse it again until it's saturated, agitate it with your hand, because a lot of little specks of bacteria can get underneath the leaves of lettuces, especially where there's creases, and that's why you get all that out. Same thing with a mushroom. You have to cut the stem off, because there's no nutrition in the stem. And then you wash the top and bottom of the mushroom, then you press it out, then you can dehydrate it, and then it's good to go all week. So this way you don't have to be cooking every single day. And that way you can be growing your own produce, a lot of it, microgreens, vegetables, blueberries, oranges, lemons, strawberries, and raspberries. You can grow all those on a terrace, in your kitchen, or in your backyard, depending upon what space you have. But the single most important thing you can do for your health overall, I don't care what your age, and I don't care as far as at least those of teenagers and up to senior citizens, is juicing living foods. A living food is not a processed food. Ideally, the living food should come locally, and it should be grown organically in a sustainable farming method. And with hydroponics will be the single most important source of food in the future. Behind that will not be factory farming, which is the worst way to farm. Monofarming is terrible, single crops, but rather sustainable indigenous methods throughout the whole world. That is the way to save the soil, save the dirt. And so when you get in the habit of doing this, finding the local farmers' markets, finding local farms, and then having them grow for you and a group of friends. That way you can tell them exactly what you want, and they'll grow it for you. And then have your last meal. Now, of course, there are going to be exceptions. Of course, there's going to be times where you're going to go out, you're going to be with friends, family, and you're going to eat at different hours. And occasionally, that's not going to make a difference. That won't hurt you. This is not something you have to be ramrod rigid about. But try as best you can to have your eating, let's say, end at around 7 o'clock at night and not have your next meal to 7 the next morning. So if you have dinner at 7 and breakfast at 7, you've had 12 hours for the body to go through a catabolic process of breaking down dead tissue, taking fibrous material and washing out of the body, having the whole metabolic phenomena of homeostasis being created in your intestine by the fermentation of prebiotic and probiotic bacteria, and therefore selecting your foods to make sure you're getting that into the diet. And then in the morning, when you vacate, you're vacating out the dead cells, the unused fibers, which also helps you lower your cholesterol level, the more fiber you have, and also the bacteria. It all goes out. And the juices help keep you clean. The more juices you drink, the cleaner you are, healthier you are. And having done this new clinical study, the only one of its kind ever done, in fact, we were checking all over the world literature, we find people are trying to do something like this in Spain. And wow, very expensive. They're charging people, excluding blood tests and medical doctors, just for a night in a place there, and they're booked a year in advance. It's almost $400 a night. And they recommend people stay there for a month minimum or 2 months. Now, they're not doing it as a clinical study. That's just where, and they're flooded all over Europe. People in Europe are really hip to being healthier than what we are in the United States. In fact, yesterday, I went to a movie. I wanted to see a new one with Adam Sandler, something about, what was Jim Stones. He's a jeweler who gets caught up in some nasty business. In any case, that one was full. It was, you know, the holidays. But as I'm waiting in line, I'm looking around. And as they're buying tickets, they're buying hot dogs and popcorn, everything else, loaded up. And they're all obese. Every single person I saw in that lobby was fat. And I'm thinking, do they have... And I'll bet they've just come from having a major meal earlier in the day. This is the addictive part of socializing, you know, eating when you no longer need the food, and you certainly don't need the junk that you're eating because it's almost always bad, either highly salty or highly sugared. And I thought they have no idea the diseases that they're producing, nor the pain that they're under. And they're probably, if I ask the average adult, are you taking pain? Oh, yeah, I'm taking pain medication. I'm taking blood pressure medication. I'm taking, you know, diabetes medication. You are aware that what I'm aware? No, my doctor would have told me. So that is not the same case in Europe and other countries where they're far more aware of how to keep themselves healthy. In any case, by doing this fasting altogether on juices for 2 days a week, Saturday and Sunday, and then leaving 12 to 15 hours each day, I have seen remarkable, fully documented objective evidence of rejuvenation. And this week, well, tomorrow, I'm going to have one of those people on who's just finishing tomorrow. Some of the people started late, a month late, and that's why I had to stay an extra month to monitor those people and be with them every day. But the results are nothing. You're here for yourself. Let the person say what they experienced. But now this study, and mind you, this is from Johns Hopkins University, mainstream medicine, and the New England Journal of Medicine. Now, the New England Journal of Medicine doesn't publish bad science. So here they are showing that, quote, intermittent fasting can be part of a healthy lifestyle. That's professor of neuroscience at the University School of Medicine. Wrote a book about it. So you've got the information now. Now it takes the discipline to do it. Also, researchers are looking at the impact of medical foods, what we call functional foods, in Alzheimer's patients. Now, this is three universities in the United States, Rutgers University, in the United Kingdom, University of Winchester, and in Germany, University of Regensburg. And this was published in the Journal of Food Science and Human Wellness, a major study. They also had researchers from China, Germany, Japan, also involved in this. And what they were looking for was there something in the diet that could impact, in a positive way, Alzheimer's disease? And because there's nothing medically that will, not a single drug. You see those ads on television, oh, there's mom, there's dad, they don't know who we are, but we love them, and so we're going to donate to this foundation. Nonsense. If you only knew where your money actually went when you give to all these foundations and NGOs, you wouldn't give anymore. You'd be very selective. Not that all foundations are misusing money, but an awful lot are. In fact, we're going to publish a list of the foundations that we believe are legitimate because we checked the salaries of its executives, what percentage of donations go for administration. That's always the first key. And then which go to the actual research or to patient care. And that's what we want to see. 90% should always go to patient care, because otherwise you've got a whole industry of 1 million people doing research that proves nothing, except they're smart enough to know how to sit at that table and get fed. In any case, what they found was this. They have found that, of course, inflammatory markers from the diet and lifestyle influence brain activity and cognitive function. So the more inflammation in the way of hot dogs, hamburgers, french fries, stress, alcohol, electromagnetic frequencies, all of these can cause inflammation. That leads to dementia, and dementia leads to Alzheimer's. Remember, Alzheimer's is not a separate disease. It's a part of the syndromes of cognitive defects, which you see in dementia. And what they found was the best diet is a Mediterranean diet, and it's rich in medical foods. And that was a very big plus. Plus, they also found, in addition to that, that there were epidemiological studies and clinical trials that showed that the Mediterranean diet improves cognitive performance and lowers the risk of neurodegenerative diseases. But they also found that it was the phytonutrients, such as flavanols, carotenoids, sulfur compounds, there's your garlic, onions, shallots, as well as omega fatty acids, that fight inflammation. And inflammation in the brain activates immune cells called microglia, and this activation has been linked to the development of Alzheimer's. Also, there are certain types of fat that could provide a ketogenic source of energy for people with Alzheimer's, because one very important characteristic of Alzheimer's is a decrease in glucose utilization, particularly in the brain. See, normally, your body produces alternative energy sources called ketone bodies when it is deprived of glucose. And scientists have discovered that while glucose metabolism is impaired in the brains of people with Alzheimer's, utilization of ketone bodies are not affected, hence more ketone bodies. And that's where coconut oil is probably your single best healthy fat that would supply that. But then they found that there are other nutrients that make a big difference. And one of those nutrients is caprylic acid and N-acetylcysteine. And N-acetylcysteine is very, very important. So, some good news. Also, if you have tinnitus, T-I-N-N-I-T-U-S, according to University of Athens, which is in Greece, they did a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trial published in the peer-reviewed journal Nutrients and found that antioxidant supplementation benefited men and women with the condition. And generally, as people have ringing in the ears or other noise in the absence of outside stimuli, so, and sometimes it's chronic, and this is really due to oxidative stress. So they found the antioxidants make a big difference. Which antioxidants? Vitamin A, B1, B2, B3, which is niacin, B6, which is pyridoxine, folic acid, which is folate, pantothenic acid, which is B5, biotin, vitamin B12, pyrimidine benzoic acid, choline, inositol, vitamin C, vitamin E, calcium, magnesium, iron, copper, manganese, selenium, chromium, molybdenum, iodine, grapeseed, and alpha-lipoic acid. All those work together, and that's good. And also, finally, from the Max Planck Institute, they did an article that was published in Cell Metabolism that shows a diet high in animal protein, and that's probably 95% of the American population. Listen carefully. It's associated with a 75% increased risk of early death. Well, so as a result, the giant food marketing companies, using Edward Bernays, the father of all propaganda, has been lying. The government has known this. The USDA totally corrupt, the FDA beyond corrupt, and the CDC, well, long ago someone should have said, what's that smell? Someone flushed the toilet. That's what I think of the CDC in its entirety. It's a racist organization. It shouldn't exist. We should have a public oversight, non-bureaucratic agency with independent science, and we don't. So here's the takeaway message. You're eating a meat-based diet? Okay. You're risking an early death. It's just that simple. That's the latest on health and healing. We are 21 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to go directly into the idea of self-esteem, gratification, and addiction. This is by Simon Sinek, S-I-N-E-K. And let me just remind you, for those of you who would like to call in after any of our segments and share your comments and points of view, our talkback number is 888-874-4888. And if you miss a show, go to the archives. Here's our archival number, 701-719-9976, 701-719-9976. And to listen live every day, 774-337-6068, 774-337-6068. And by the way, when we come back from this spot, you can watch it by going to youtube.com/PRNFM, youtube.com/PRNFM. FM. Back in a moment.
Generation.
This is a big time bomb ticking.
It will get really worse. Right. Okay, so combine that with the fact, so you have an addicted generation that doesn't have the skill set to ask for help. Combine with the fact that they're so good at Facebook and Instagram, they're good at putting filters on everything. So they're good at showing you how smart and strong they are. These kids who commit suicide, you go look at their Instagrams, you would have no clue that they were depressed because they're happy and they're star athletes. Right? You'd have no clue because they're really good. So when we say silly things like, my door is always open, you're assuming they have the courage to come in. Combined with the fact that they're subject largely, not all, but too many, to a failed parenting strategy. Because their parents told them they were special, they could have anything they wanted, they can be anything they want, they got medals for coming in last, which by the way we know doesn't work. It devalues the medal for the one who comes in first and the one who came in last. It makes them feel stupid because they know they didn't deserve it. Right? The kids got into honors classes not because they deserved it, but because the parents complained. And some of them got good grades not because they earned them, but because the teachers didn't want to deal with the parents. And then the kids graduate college, and they get a job, and in an instant, they find out they're not special. They don't get anything for coming in last. Their parents can't get them a promotion. And you can't have whatever you want just because you want it. And in an instant, their entire self-image is shattered. And so you have an entire generation growing up with lower self-confidence than previous generations. So you have lower self-confidence than previous generations, combined with an inability to ask for help with things that you're struggling with, and you turn to social media or device, you keep checking, you keep checking, you count your likes, you count your likes, you count your followers, you count your followers. And if somebody unfriends you, oh my God, it's trauma, right? The way they break up with each other is they just ghost each other, just cut each other out and stop returning texts and returning phone calls, because they don't have the skill set to say, hey, it's not working out. It's not me, it's you, right? There's no closure on things, right? Combined with the fact there's an institutionalized impatience. So they've grown up in a world of instant gratification. You want to buy something? You go on Amazon. It shows up the next day. You want to get in touch with someone? You don't leave a message on their machine and wait 4 hours for them to get the message. You just text them and they get back to you immediately. You want to watch a movie? You just log on and watch it. You don't have to check movie times, right? Everything happens instant. You want to get a date? Swipe right. You don't even have to muster up the courage to go and be like, hey, you know? You don't have to. There you go, got a date, right? And so the problem is, they're accused of being entitled. I don't think they're entitled at all, not at all. I think they're impatient. I keep meeting these fantastic, smart, driven, ambitious, idealistic, fantastic kids who graduated school, they got a job, they want to make an impact in the world, and I go up to them and say, how's it going? And they say, I think I'm going to quit. I'm like, why? They're like, I'm not making an impact. I'm like, you've been here 8 months. And it's as if they see the summit of a mountain. It's as if they're standing at the foot of a mountain, they can see the summit, they can see the thing they want. I want to make an impact. What they don't see is the mountain, this large, immovable object. You can go up fast, you can go up slow, I don't care, but there's still a mountain. What they don't understand is that life, that relationships, and career fulfillment are a journey. There's no app for that. I got nothing. You gotta go through the slow, plodding, annoying, meandering process called career and life. But if they don't get it in 8 months, they go look for it somewhere else. And they don't get it, they go look for it somewhere else. It's impatience. And because they don't have the skill set to ask for help, and because they feel lonely, it compounds and compounds.
Solutions for this?
So then, yeah, we dump them in office environments that are built on theories from the 80s and 90s that prioritizes a number before a person, and no one really cares about their confidence and their personal growth. They're just numbers on a spreadsheet. And so they enter work cultures that don't help them. And the problem is they're entering the workforce at a deficit. I hear from kids. They tell me that they struggle to form deep, meaningful relationships, and the companies don't care. And so it's destructive to them as individuals, but ultimately it'll hurt the companies because more and more millennials are entering the workforce. I believe, to your point about solution, that now the responsibility on companies is even greater than it's ever been before, right, to take care of its people. Because if the environments in which we're asking our youngest workers to work in isn't built to help them, I can't even imagine what the suicide and homicide and just the rates of depression, you know, an accidental death due to overdose are going to look like in the future. It's going to reach epidemic proportions. It's already, the statistics are already alarming, and yet nobody's sounding any alarm bells. Parents have to intervene. We have to stop giving our kids free access to social media and phones at young ages. They are not ready for it. Their minds cannot cope with the dopamine. Balance is fine. You can give a kid a phone, but they can't use it in their bedroom. They can't have it at the dinner table. They can't take it to school. They can only have it up to a certain hour, and you take it away. They're children. You can take the phone away. We've got to intervene as parents. But as companies, we now have to deal with the influx of kids that are coming into our companies with addiction. Watch, I see it all the time. Walk through any office. You'll see the older employees have their phones on the sides of their computers as they're working. You'll see the youngest employees have their phones face up in front of their keyboards between their arms as they're working. And this is how they work. And the science is alarming. They did experiments on mice where they did the multitasking. They put flashing lights to mimic going from the computer to the cell phone, the computer to the cell phone to the TV. The mice that were exposed to the changing lights, it took them 3 times longer to solve a maze than the mice that weren't, and the damage was permanent. It didn't improve when they stopped the lights.
This is intense. And the leadership now is even more important than ever.
And leadership now is even more important.
Yeah.
And the leaders now are even more irresponsible. You are responsible for the lives of human beings, and some of these human beings are your children. So, okay, you bastard CEO who thinks all the stuff that I talk about is craziness, and you don't have time to make these changes. This is what I hear. We don't have time. It's a war out there. I've actually heard executives tell me that. It's a war out there. I don't have time for this leadership stuff. I know guys who go to war, and I'll tell you, it's not a war, what you're going through. You know, you tinker with money. It's not a war. You do have time for this. And if it's really that way, then what were you doing when it wasn't a war?
To watch the rest.
Okay. There are things that he said I agree with, but there are things he left out. Now, maybe in a longer presentation, he might have included them, such as, our parents never pretended, nor did they want, and correctly so, to become our friends. There was always a certain amount of guidance, and there was cause and effect. If you were impolite, if you were rude, if you were vulgar, you paid a price. Today, there is no price that's ever paid for anything, and as a result, a lot of parents want to be the best friend of their daughter or son or others. And boy, that destroys your ability to be a good parent. Also, why aren't we talking about the qualities that make a good parent? We assume that because you're wealthy or upper middle class, a professional person, lawyer, engineer, accountant, a scientist, you have the wherewithal and the means, the education, generally higher education that they worked hard for, that would entitle you to be a better parent. Do you have any idea how many people I've counseled in my life who had kids that were acting out, kids that killed themselves, kids that tried to kill themselves, kids that were dope addicts? Now, this is something I know intimately because I was head of addiction control at Trafalgar Hospital for years, and I saw that methadone didn't work. I saw that just simple counseling didn't work, and so I wouldn't counsel. And by the way, if they didn't come to the counseling, they went to jail. The court would give them a choice, go to counseling, take methadone, or go to jail, so they all came. And these were rarely, if ever, poor kids. Almost all of them were from very wealthy families. And so I insisted their parents be there with them. And almost universally, the parents refused to be there because they were too busy. And then I'd ask the kid, how much quality time does your parent or has your parent or parents spent with you? And one kid said it best. His name was Damien. And he was an alcoholic. Nice, nice young man, but very self-destructive. Very well-read, educated, very athletic. And he said, I was a trophy son. My mom and dad were both well-known in their fields, both successful. But I can never remember having any unconditional quality time, nor do I ever remember them saying, son, I love you. People love you if you do well, if you succeed, if you're the best at whatever you do, or if you show them that you deserve their praise. And that was his dark side limitation. He didn't have the unconditional love. But did the parents understand that? No, they didn't. Probably to this day, they wouldn't. So what do you think is missing that allows so many young people to show up whenever they want, quit without explanation, or not show up at all, don't know how to communicate, and yet they have higher educations. They're sitting frequently right now, have no idea about artificial intelligence, but if they could use it to their advantage, they would, like 5G, but are unaware that they're being spied on or they don't care. They're unaware that they have no freedoms that they once took for granted or others took for granted. They're gone. They're not doing much for the world. Look at all the things that are wrong with the world and ask yourself, where are the young people? Oh, we had Greta Thunberg. Yes, a legitimate, honest, straightforward message. I 100% endorse her message. I do not endorse her parents, nor all the people behind her, including George Soros and Bill Gates. Yes, I'm going to get into the details later this week, who's really behind her. I fully believe that she was simply an innocent, idealistic young child who was manipulated completely. But in any case, why should we have to have someone from Sweden who's a teenager come to the United States to remind 81 million young people that maybe it's time for them to grow up, get out of the bubbles of entitlement, and be responsible? Just a question. What are your thoughts? Give us a call, 888-874-4888. Now, I'm concerned about what's going on now. I'm concerned that this is highly political, this whole reason for, do I want to see Trump as president? No. He would be the last person in the world I believe should be president. But I believe that there's been fraud and the abuse of power by every administration, Republican and Democrat, going clear back, and including FDR. We've been lied to nonstop. But do we stop for a moment and pause and ask, well, if the government lied about why we're in Afghanistan, is that the same government and the agencies and the bureaucracy that lied about Libya and Syria and Russia and Ukraine? Yeah, it's the same government agencies. Different cast of people, but carrying forward the same message. Did they lie to us about the truth behind 9/11? Yeah, they lied. And yet they won't ever investigate it. They accept the official report just like they accepted the Warren report, knowing full well that it was filled with lies. Did they lie about Vietnam? Yeah, they did. Did Merck lie about Vioxx being a safe and effective COX-2 inhibiting drug for those with arthritic pain? Absolutely. Do we know that? Yeah, Dr. Graham at the FDA uncovered it, warned the FDA, and they attacked and ridiculed him and threatened him. I interviewed him. I have it on film. So they killed how many? Between 50 to 500,000 people. 50,000 to 500,000 people. That meant that one drug over a four-year period could have killed more Americans than all of American casualties in the First World War and the Vietnam War combined. Did anyone go to jail? Was anyone criticized? No. Were they allowed to keep all their ill-gained profits after paying a $5 billion fine? Yes. And this is the same Merck that also makes the MMR vaccine? Yes. So we should trust them about the vaccine, even though they show that they lied to us about and betrayed us and caused unnecessary death. Yeah. What kind of mind accepts that as normal? So when it comes to the impeachment process, and I couldn't watch it because I just found it sickening. Not because Trump shouldn't be called out for all of his high crimes and misdemeanors and his character defects and his lack of morality on any spiritual basis, his lack of intellect, his lack of awareness of domestic and foreign issues. He's, in my opinion, as much a functional illiterate as George Bush was. But the reason that we should be concerned is what Chris Hedges tells us, and that is because it's simply moral hypocrisy. What do I mean? All the sound bites by Republicans and Democrats swiftly become predictable. I stopped watching MSNBC when I knew what the answers would be, how they would posture the answer and place them from every guess they had. The Democrats, despite applauding the announcement of the voting results before being quickly silenced by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, sought to cloak themselves in gravitas and the solemn sacred duty they had. Nonsense. Pelosi's calculated decision to open the impeachment proceedings with the 1954 Under God version of the Pledge of Allegiance was an appropriate signal given the party's new McCarthyism. Yeah, up to their eyeballs in McCarthyism. Is this, by the way, the same Democratic Party and majority that voted to reinstate the Patriot Act? Yes. To fully support the National Defense Authorization Act? Yes. To support asset forfeiture of innocent people to have billions of dollars stolen from them without anyone committing a crime except the government? Yes. To fully finance over $750 billion this year above board and another $700 billion below board to the military-industrial complex? Yes. Is this the same group of people that have refused to condemn Israel at any level for any crime against humanity against the Palestinians? Yes. Is this a group that takes a pledge to support Israel no matter what? Yes. And yet it was the Democrats who posited themselves as saviors, the last line of defense between a constitutional democracy and tyranny. But what if both parties are up to their eyeballs in manifesting tyranny? It was a mind-numbing spectacle, devoid of all morality and no ethics, the kind of political theater that characterizes despotic regimes. No one in the House chamber was protecting the Constitution. That's nonsense. All they could do is virtue signal. And aren't we sick to death of political correctness and virtue signaling and identity politics? I am, and I won't tolerate it. No one was seeking to hold accountable those who had violated it. No one was fighting to restore the rule of law. The two parties, which have shredded constitutional protections and rights and sold the political process to the highest bidders, have engaged in egregious constitutional violations for years, decades, and ignored them when they were made public. Moral stances have a cost, but almost no one in Congress seems willing to pay any cost. The politicalization of the impeachment process has only exacerbated and antagonized the country. So, there's where we're at. If the Democrats and Republicans were truly committed to defending the Constitution, why didn't they impeach George Bush when he launched two illegal wars that were never declared by Congress as demanded by the Constitution? Why didn't they impeach Bush when he authorized placing the entire U.S. public under government surveillance in direct violation of the Fourth Amendment? Why didn't they impeach Bush when he authorized torture, along with kidnapping terrorist suspects around the world and holding them for years in our black site and offshore penal colonies? Why didn't they impeach Barack Obama when he expanded those illegal wars to 11? If you count Yemen, and you must count Yemen, that's Hillary and Barack's war. So every time you see a face of a starving child, just think, Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton put them there because they supported the invasion by Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. Why didn't they impeach Obama when Edward Snowden revealed that our intelligence agencies are monitoring and spying on virtually every citizen and downloading our data and metrics into government computers where they will be stored for in perpetuity? Why didn't they impeach Obama when he misused the 2002 authorization for use of military force to erase due process and give the executive branch of government the right to act as judge, jury, and executioner in assassinating U.S. citizens, starting with the radical cleric Anwar al-Awlaki, and 2 weeks later, a 16-year-old son of his? Why didn't they impeach Obama when he signed into law Section 1021 of the National Defense Authorization Act, in effect overturning the 1878 Posse Comitatus Act, which prohibits the use of military as a domestic police force? Now, go outside today and ask yourself, do the police look like the police that you and I saw growing up as children? Me in a little town in West Virginia? No. They look like you're in a war zone, and they act like it. And there are many other bipartisan constitutional violations, including violating treaty clauses that are supposed to be ratified by the Senate, violating the Constitution of making appointments without seeking Senate confirmation, and the routine abuse of the executive orders. But the two major political parties, salivating at the thought of wielding a king-like power that now comes with the presidency, have no desire to curb these far more dangerous violations. In effect, the impeachment circus, which will culminate in a preordained, choreographed, and televised show in the Senate, coincided with the Washington Post's release of what is being called the Afghanistan Papers. The Post, through a 3-year legal battle, obtained, and I mentioned this last week on our show, 2,000 pages of internal government documents about the war. The papers detail bipartisan lies and fraud and deceit and corruption and waste and gross mismanagement during the 18-year conflict, the longest in U.S. history. It's a blistering indictment of the ruling class. Ruling class meaning everyone in power. It is irrelevant to those oligarchs and people in the deep state, whether you're conservative or liberal. That is irrelevant. Yeah. So there we have it. The fact that we have $21 trillion missing is irrelevant. The fact that the CIA can do whatever it wants and then put a past CIA director to defend everything in the deep state on CNN and another National Security Agency director, Clapper, on MSNBC or vice versa. And by the way, why is it that we haven't asked to see the transcripts from the National Security Agency of every call made between George Bush and Obama and Trump? Every one of their administration calls, since the National Security Agency has all those calls, and therefore we could see actual transcripts, listen to the tapes and look at the transcripts of all the secrets and the double dealing. In a functioning democracy, the publication of the Afghan papers would see generals and politicians who knowingly deceived the public hauled before congressional committees. The Fulbright hearings, remember them during the Vietnam War? Although they did not lead to prosecutions, at least aggressively held U.S. officials to account and made public their duplicity and failure. But in the wake of the new disclosures, no one in either party or the military will be held accountable for the debacle in Afghanistan, a conflict that saw a vast waste of somewhere between $2 to $3 trillion. Oh, and by the way, did we forget about how we, the United States and the Allies, knew full well that nearly $90 billion a year was being earned from the opium trade, or the heroin trade, I should say, from the poppy fields out of Afghanistan? Yeah. Why isn't there any discussion in the Afghanistan papers, the Washington Post, about how the United States government aided and abetted drug production and drug distribution? But we didn't do a single thing. No. But we did find that the Republicans and Democrats passed that $738 billion defense bill for this coming year. Wow. So you see, there we are. We're in the midst of being lied to and betrayed at every level. What are your thoughts? I'd like to hear from you now. So give us a call, 888-874-4888. I've given you several important issues that I think are relevant today. I'd like to hear your thoughts. And we have Daryl from the Bronx. Hi, Daryl. You're on the air.
Dr. Noll, it's a pleasure to speak to you. I had a call from my nephew who's stationed in Poland. And I know that you have extensive experience with talking to military people. And what was quite disturbing is that they're in a small town in Poland on deployment, and almost the whole, there's no alcohol allowed on the base, so almost the whole base goes off base to get intoxicated to the point of blacking out. And when I asked, was that just enlisted people? He said enlisted people, officers, and I think that that might give a clue to why the suicide rate among soldiers returning and then being separated, along with the economy and other things, is so high. And so what I was asking was, do you have any advice for me in speaking with him?
I could share a few thoughts. It's a legitimate concern you have, Daryl. First, I would ask, what is the real purpose of being in the military? There are legitimate reasons to be in the military, and there are legitimate people who are in there. I would not like to see what would happen if we had no National Guard to help us with hurricane recovery and in case there was some natural disaster. I would hate to think that we had no police. You know, it's easy to say, you know, down with the police until suddenly you are the victim. You take away the police, and suddenly those who are opportunists and of criminal mind and would exploit that and have, because some of the neighborhoods in America that are most riddled with crime are those that are the least protected by the police. But it's how you do it and how you teach the police how to confront and disarm crisis before it leads to any kind of shooting, and especially lethal shooting or kill shots. The same is true with the military. We don't need almost 1,000 bases around the world. We do not need to be the world's policeman. In fact, everywhere where we have a military base, there's almost always environmental degradation because we don't care about the consequences to the environment, not even the United States, let alone any other country. And almost always there's graft and corruption where we bribe people in order to be in their countries. And by the way, that was one of the underlying reasons that Osama bin Laden was able to garner strength through the creation of Al-Qaeda, because there was military presence in Saudi Arabia, which was against the, let's say, the theocrats in the country, the Wahhabists. Had there been no military base in Saudi Arabia, there's a high probability that Osama bin Laden would not have been a part of that, because he actually supported the United States as part of the Mujahideen in Afghanistan because of the destruction of the Afghan economy from the Russians. So there's, you have to look at the consequences of military presence around the world. And being in the military has generally been at least 80% of people who are poor, couldn't find work, and when they're told they're going to get a bonus, they're going to get free health care, and they're going to have an environment they can live in that is, at least for the family, safe, it's secure. If you're unemployed, if you're a person of color, if you're a person who doesn't have an advanced education, and you're looking at the world we live in today, depending upon the circumstances in your life, you could think, well, the military at least is an option, especially if I don't have to face combat. And not everyone in the military faces combat. Only a tiny fraction of the people deployed face combat versus the others who are in support systems. But then there's a culture within the military. There's a high-level alpha male, alpha female culture. That's not healthy. And as a result, there's a great deal of stress away from family and friends and not always fitting into the culture. And then you get involved with conflict in a culture you're not familiar with, the social culture, religious culture. And then you start fearing for your own life. And that's when they start taking medications. And that can lead to addictive behavior or suicide, or suicide thoughts. So those are, I would have that kind of conversation with them. A deeper, more meaningful, more intimate, personal conversation of what is the meaning of your life? What do you want that meaning to be? And then help guide him from there. Okay, Daryl?
Thank you so much, Dr. Noel.
All the best to you. Bye. I want to finish our program today with this. I'm going to quote this. Armie Hammer, Sophia Ritchie, Alexandria Ambrosia, and a host of other celebrities are being slammed as sellouts for attending a music festival in Saudi Arabia to promote the controversial kingdom. Models Elsa Hosk, Winnie Harlow, Joan Smalls, Irina Seilek, Ryan Phillip, Edward Westwick, Scott Disk, and an array of influencers traveled to the capital and posted photographs on social media with messages praising the kingdom. The social network star Hammer, who said the festival, quote, felt like a cultural shift, end quote, and Philip were pictured in Arab dress and headwear. Happy couple Richie and Disk stayed at the Ritz-Carlton in the capital, five-star hotel, where Saudi Arabia Mohammed bin Salman imprisoned over 200 of his political opponents, including members of his own family in 2017. Critics are accusing the celebs of accepting up to six-figure sums to gloss over the image of Saudi Arabia while ignoring the country's stance on women, LGBTQ rights, the arrest of women's rights activists, and the government's involvement in the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. Fashion watchdog Diet Prada posted on Instagram and then went into all these people, just a whole train, a whole plane full of people went over there. And I find that reprehensible. I find that going to a country because you're paid and you're a celebrity. So What are your thoughts? Hold those thoughts for today. We don't have time to take your call. But we have a lot of people who are not thinking through things, and the consequences are feel because they're young and entitled and rich and always on some red carpet, that it doesn't matter. But at the same time that they're doing that, today it was announced that a leading human rights advocate was killed. They're beheaded. Are they even aware that Saudi Arabia leads the world in beheadings, just like ISIS, and that they sponsor terrorism? Are they that disconnected? Evidently. So we will continue this dialogue. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day. Girl, try to remember when we didn't have no shoes.